Jack's scream was painful for Mildred to listen to. The albino teen had been brought into a sort of large shower room that Azaxer and his family used, not only to keep themselves clean, but as an infirmary as well. There were a few rudimentary medical tools on shelves on the walls, and a few basic supplies stored in jars, but the best aspect of the room was the homemade wooden table in the center of it. The table was basically a workbench that had been converted into a sort of bed. It was covered with a rag-filled mattress, and a series of leather belts was positioned at its edges, starting at the head and going down the body. Obviously, Azaxir's family had had to deal with dangerous patients before, maybe even on a regular basis. Mildred had done her best to make Jack comfortable, keeping him hydrated as she toweled the sweat from his body. She also used damp towels to keep his body temperature down to acceptable levels. A few of the Azaxir family members had offered her some rudimentary sedatives that were something like pre-dark Valium, but Mildred was hesitant to give Jack anything she really didn't have to, since she didn't know when the others would be returning and couldn't be sure how whatever she gave him to rest would react with the antibodies they would be bringing her later on. Mildred couldn't help but be affected by her friend's pain, but the rest of the Azaxir family seemed unbothered by the sound of the albino teen's suffering. One of the older children, whose name Mildred remembered him saying was Islier, spoke up.
We have heard much worse. When my brother came back from the Ville, he had been on Bang for 3 months. He screamed for 7 days before he was finally off the drug.
He gestured to Jack.
For him, it has not even been 7 hours.
Mildred wondered how long it had been and glanced at her wrist chron. Not even 2 hours since the friends had left. Sec-Chief Viviani was the first to crawl out from under the sign.
Is everyone all...
He stopped in mid-sentence when he saw the head of one of his Sec-men several yards away from the man's body.
I'm all right.
Cut my arm, but I'll live.
Viviani looked away from the dead man.
How is he?
Dead.
There was a moment of silence as the survivors took this in.
Where do they go?
Who?
Robard's Sec-men.
They're gone.
Maybe they're trying to get around us and knock down the sign as a distraction.
A sliver of fear crept up Viviani's spine. Maybe taking control of the Ville wasn't going to be as easy as Baroness Lashini thought.
Let's get back to the Baroness's residence. We'll set up a position there. If we can't take over the rest of the Ville, at least we'll control the main gate in the Ville's control center.
It is down there.
There were the remains of a pre-dark fence on the edge of the square, and the entrance to the cairn itself was a three-sided rectangular box that had one end open to a stairway that led down into the ground.
There is a door at the bottom of the stairs that leads under the bell tower. It was a room they kept electronic and public address equipment in for the square. You know, so they could make announcements at special events and such.
Why store medicine there?
Why not? Few people know where it leads. The room is dry and cool in both winter and summer, and it is easy to get to, if you have a key.
Azaxir led them to the stairs. When they stopped there, they all looked at the Muti, whose own red eyes were wide in surprise. The door at the bottom of the stairs was unlocked and open. The Mutis had stormed through the main gate, stoning the Sec-men there, then taking their weapons before charging into the heart of the Ville. They were tempted to head for the Baron's residence first, but it was the most heavily defended part of the Ville, and attacking it now was akin to suicide. They were better off taking over the back alleys and side streets, and rolling the dealers for both their drugs and their jack. Some of them even carried weapons, which would give their inevitable assault on the Baron's residence an even better chance at success. The Muties stayed close to the shadows, although their rambling gait betrayed their presence, as looping hands and feet often strayed into the light as they walked. But they made no sound. Their leader, an older man with a body covered with scars, led them to a part of the Ville known for its gaudy houses and jolt dealers, Jarvis Street. As they neared the street, it seemed as if no one in the neighborhood was aware that the Ville was under siege. The lights were on in each of the gaudy houses, and there were jolt dealers on every street corner. But once they reached Jarvis Street itself, it was obvious that the gaudy houses had been affected by the change in power and were busy doing business with the new Sec force. And while the dealers out on the street were still there, now they had a Sec man watching over them, ready to take the Baron's cut of the dealer's gross. or what the new Baroness would take as a cut when she figured out the intricacies of the Ville's finances. They took out the first Sec man with a spear to the head. That convinced the dealer to give up his money, jolt and bang, as well as his blaster, a single-shot homemade weapon strapped to his right wrist. When a Sec man came out of the gaudy house to see what was going on, the muties chilled him with the blaster from the previous dealer. Then they took his blaster as well. When another Sec man came out to see what had happened to the first, they used the first Sec man's blaster to chill him. And on and on and on. Eventually, Sec men stopped coming out into the street. That's when the muties moved on to the next gaudy house, dividing the appropriated jolt and bang between themselves. As a result, they were an army that was becoming increasingly well-armed by the hour. And thanks to the jolt and bang, they were also becoming more fearless, not to mention reckless, the deeper they moved into the Ville.
What's past this door?
Azaxir studied his map again.
There is a short hallway just inside, and then another door, without a lock on it, that leads into the storage room.
How big's the storage room?
Probably no more than 10 feet by 20.
If we go in blasting, will we damage the antibodies?
It is hard to say. If they are still in storage, no. But if there is someone in there, and they have the antibodies in their hands or in a pocket...
We'll take our chances. JB and I will lead.
And then, without another word, Ryan slipped down the stairs, followed by the armorer. Christy, Doc, and Azaxir stayed above ground, making sure the others would have an escape route and wouldn't get holed up in the stairway. At the bottom of the stairs, Ryan pushed the door fully open with the point of his index finger. It swung open silently at first, but then creaked on its hinges. Ryan couldn't stop the door from moving and hoped that whoever was inside would think it was just the wind. Ryan and JB remained alert, their blasters pointed through the doorway and ready to fill the darkness with lead the moment someone appeared. But no one did. They pressed on, through the door, and into the darkness. Surely whoever was inside had a light with them, an open flame or lantern. Then, as they got closer to the second doorway, a sliver of light materialized on the floor beneath the bottom of the door. They watched the light for several moments. Ryan turned to JB and first put up an index finger, then added another finger, asking the armorer if he thought there were one or two people inside. JB held up two fingers. Ryan nodded, then glanced to JB to see if he was ready. The armorer nodded. Ryan moved closer to the door. It was a steel door and would probably stop their 9mm fire from causing any damage inside the room. They needed an unobstructed line of fire, and they would have it in seconds. JB took a position about a yard from the door, planted his feet, then raised his Uzi to waist height. Ryan reached for the doorknob and put his hand on it. He took a breath, then turned the knob and pulled the door open in a single swift motion. JB was about to open fire until he saw the identity of the two figures in the room by the light of their lantern. It was Moira and Eleander.
Moira?
She was leaning over her mother, who was lying flat on the floor. The girl seemed to be in shock, as she didn't even respond to Ryan. She just kept shivering and looking down at the supine form of Eleander. Unfortunately, Ryan didn't have time to figure out what had happened.
JB, go let everyone know we're all right. And call Azaxir down here so we know what we're looking for.
JB nodded and went back to the bottom of the stairs. Ryan moved forward into the room. There was a small amount of light from the lantern, but he would need a brighter, more intense light to find what they needed. In moments, Azaxir was with them.
You have something I can use as a torch?
A large flame suddenly erupted in Azaxir's hand. He handed the torch to Ryan.
Are the antibodies here?
The room was filled with a couple of banks of pre-dark electronic equipment, and other parts of the room had been used for storage for all sorts of things, from ropes and chains to shovels and swords. There were plenty of boxes, too, but they didn't have time to go through them to discover their contents. Azaxir went to one corner of the room, where a heavy steel cabinet was already open. He glanced at the two other people in the room, but either didn't recognize them for the lack of good lighting, or was too busy to care.
Moira told me that they are usually stored here. Whoever those two are, they were probably after the same thing. I imagine the antibodies will be pretty valuable now that the flow of drugs might be disrupted for a while.
Azaxir?
Moira, is that you?
Azaxir knelt down, lighting the faces of the two women with his torch.
What are you doing here?
Trying to help my mother? she overdosed. Found her and brought her here. Antibodies.
But it was obvious that Eleander was too far gone for the medicine to have any effect. As Axier brought the flame down closer to the woman's face. And then, surprisingly, her eyes gently fluttered open. She looked over at Ryan.
I know you.
Ryan said nothing, but the expression on his face relayed the question that was on his mind.
Couldn't leave. Needed drugs.
Ryan reached down to hold her hand. She coughed up some blood, and it trickled out of the corner of her mouth.
What a fool I've been. You must tell Theo. I'm so sorry.
She took a final wheezing breath, and then Eleander was still.